Morning, everybody. Last time we thought together about different types of prayer: reflection, meditation and contemplation. Reflection describing, well, our day to God, asking him for things and reflecting our lives back to him. Meditation turns us towards God as we think of his character. And finally, contemplation, sitting with God, allowing God to set the agenda. Today, despite some brilliant scriptures lined up for us to look at on prayer from Luke, Matthew, Acts and Numbers, I felt God directing me towards the Psalms. Of course, the Psalms are prayers, honest, open prayers of faith, praise, trust and utter despair. And if you're not sure what to pray, then you can always find a psalm that will voice your feelings. What caught my eye was the first part of one little verse in the Psalms, the beginning of verse 7 of Psalm 42. It reads, "Deep calls to deep in the roar of your waterfalls. All your waves and breakers have washed over me." The Passion Translation gives it a simpler interpretation. "My deep need calls out to the deep kindness of your love." If you read the whole of Psalm 42, you'll read a prayer of one who is calling out to God. A chaotic prayer which ranges from praise to God for saving the psalmist to cries of, "Why have you forgotten me?" One minute the psalmist's heart is breaking and the next he remembers with enthusiasm the celebration of worship. So pretty normal stuff then. In fact, the psalmist sounds like the very waves and surging tides he speaks of later in the verse. His words echo the words of Jonah's prayer when Jonah was in the belly of the fish, speaking about his ordeal of being cast into the deep heart of the sea. "All your waves and billows passed over me." Being distant from God is like being in the chaotic sea, tossed about with no firm footing. But we need not fear, because deep calls to deep. In the midst of our lives, maybe trauma or disillusionment, maybe feeling like we're not getting through to God, this phrase reminds us that God calls out to us. Deep calls to deep. Our souls yearn for him. God, deep love, inexplainable, indescribable, unfathomable, greater than any words or thoughts can express, calls out to us, to the depth of our souls. Deep calls to deep. The Message paraphrase renders the verse as chaos calls to chaos. Not that God is chaotic in a wanton sense, perhaps more that his might cannot be restrained. And we do so like to restrain God. When we meditate on God, we can only use a finite, limited vocabulary, yet we speak of an infinite God. We use words that can never convey all there is to experience, describe or understand. God is too much, to paraphrase Rowan Williams. We can only hint at transcendency, majesty and power. Lauren Winner suggests that it is inadequate to say anything about God, which is why silence is a necessary part of prayer, where our insufficient words about God are poised. There's even a whole branch of theology known as apathetic theology, which studies this conundrum. As soon as we utter a word to describe God, it has in a way limited and reduced God by using that very word. Have you noticed that God likes to hide? Many stories point to him concealing himself from people, and then at other times in the Bible, revealing himself. God hides in bread and wine, in silence, in creation, in poverty, in those marginalised. Yet at times God also reveals himself and loves to be sought after. In Jeremiah 29:13 we read, "You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all of your heart. I will be found by you," declares the Lord. Like a child playing hide and seek who reveals themselves by laughing, God seems to hide and disclose himself at the same time. God communicates through our mundane, everyday experiences. He is present in all of life and human experience. Yet he's uncontainable. And when Moses asked God his name, God simply replied, "I am." Whilst I was on annual leave, I found God hiding in places in plain sight, so to speak. A bit like a child who hides in the same place when they play hide and seek. You can be playing hide and seek, looking for them, and at the same time know exactly where they are. Tapping into the variety and richness of ways to pray keeps communication open and alive. If God seems to be hiding from you, keep seeking in different ways. He loves to be found. I've come across a number of Christian practices recently in the secular world. On a recent podcast, they championed the use of controlled breathing, physiologically altering your body by inducing a sense of calm. They suggested two different ways of doing this, the 3-4-5 method and the box method. The 3-4-5 method is when you breathe in for a count of three, you hold your breath for a count of four, and breathe out for a count of five. Or box breathing, which is apparently used by Navy SEALs before they go into a stressful situation. You just imagine going around the four sides of a box or a square. Breathe in for the count of four, hold for the count of four, breathe out for the count of four, and hold for the count of four. You may prefer one or the other of these. And that's interesting, I thought. We've been using breath prayers as Christians for centuries, and we use it as part of our regular pattern at Nourish. Prayers like the Jesus Prayer, "Lord Jesus, have mercy on me, a sinner," which works really well with breathing. Or the four-syllable prayer, "Maranatha," which means "Come, Lord Jesus." This is not really any different to box breathing when you count in and use the four syllables. And yet it's imbued with the transcendent when we invite the Spirit's presence as we breathe. And we mustn't forget that the Spirit is breath, is life. So, it's official. This type of praying is great for our spiritual and mental health. If you don't already do it, why not slip it into your daily routine? Perhaps before sleep, or as we breathe all the time, you can do it anywhere. In the podcast I was listening to, the importance of getting out into nature was also a theme. And I know many of us find a thin space, so named a place where heaven and earth just seem to touch. It's easier to sense God's presence when we're outside in God's creation. I was struggling to get on with some work the other day, so I decided to get out into the garden, where I found it much easier to soak up God's presence whilst my mind was occupied with pulling up weeds. They also spoke about journaling, writing experiences down before you go to sleep, which helps the mind to relax. You don't necessarily have to answer the questions the day's thrown up, but simply recognise them, get them out, sit with them. I thought having a spiritual journal is something Christians have been advocating for a long time. It's something I dip in and out of. I don't do it religiously, if you'll pardon the pun, but in fits and starts. And I find it extremely helpful to write down what God and I are working on at any given time. My thoughts, concerns, joys, prayers, and then even more helpful to look back and see how the Spirit has been moving over time. You don't need anything other than a notebook, so, well, I guess even a note on your phone. Why not give it a try? One of the primary ways the Israelites interacted with God in the Bible, and their souls called out to the deep God, as God called out to them, was through smell. Noah made burnt offerings to the Lord, and God pledged never again to destroy the earth in that way when he smelled the pleasing odour. God also smells in incense in Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Song of Songs and Hosea. The Bible describes God accepting incense offerings as a soothing odour. Human beings communicated with God through fragrance. I guess we all appreciate the smell of freshly baked bread or coffee or flowers. or use lavender to soothe ourselves to sleep. Lauren Winner says, to describe God as one who smells, as one who enjoyed the smell of all that incense, is to imply something about God's emotional life. It turns out that of all our sensory perceptions, smell is most directly connected to the seat of our emotions. The area of the brain that processes smell and emotions are as intertwined and codependent as any two regions of the brain could possibly be. Smells can calm us and give us a sense of security. In Revelation, we're told that the prayers of the saints are incense, and it's the smell of our prayers that connects us to God. In Reformed churches, we're beginning again to appreciate the use of fragrant candles as a symbol of God's light. But perhaps there is more to it than simply visual representation. Finally, I was reading a book about the Examine Prayer. It's a prayer that Ignatius of Loyola instigated. Maurice spoke about it last autumn. It's part of our Light of Life evening liturgy, and it's especially useful at the end of the day or end of the week or end of a significant time. It's very straightforward, simply asking yourself two questions and allowing the Spirit to speak through your God-given imagination. There's an app called Sacred Space which can guide you in this. But by consciously noticing two things, what has brought us the most amount of joy and what has brought us the least amount of joy, we're seeing what has brought us closer or further away from God. Ignatius called these moments of consolation and desolation. Consolation is whatever helps us connect with ourselves, with God and with others. Desolation is whatever disconnects us. So the first question is simply, what has brought you joy during the day? You can rephrase this question with, what has brought you the most hope, encouragement, growth? What are you most grateful for? Or what did you most love about today? What's been the best bit, made you feel the most alive, brought the greatest sense of belonging, or been the high point of the day? When you've noticed this, spend time thanking God for it. We know how important an attitude of gratitude is, and we're thinking on whatever is lovely and praiseworthy, as the letter to the Philippians encourages us to do. Noticing these moments of consolation help us learn the art of spiritual reflection, which we can use throughout the day. It brings awareness of these moments that we might easily pass as insignificant. The second question is the reverse. Spend time noticing what brought the least joy to your day. What were the challenges? What drained you the most? What was the low point? When did you move away from God and feel least connection with Him, yourself and others? And just as you spent time thanking God for the high point, now spend time talking with Him about the low point. The idea is not to try and solve an issue, but simply to notice it, to love yourself despite it, and to leave it with God. Focusing on these two questions of what gives us life or what drains life from us can help us answer decisions we might be facing and give direction to our lives as God speaks through our feelings of consolation and desolation. You may be wondering, how do I know God's speaking to me? Is it simply my imagination? Well, God speaks through many ways, rarely direct words in the sky. That's God being hidden again. And Him longing to seek us, Him longing for us to seek Him. Even when we read the Bible, it's influenced by our own imagination interpretation, and our lives are no less a sign of God's revelation. If we're struggling to discern if it's God we're hearing or ourselves, then there are a couple of things we can do. Firstly, share with a close friend, someone you trust, to get their perspective. And if you haven't got someone like that, then do it as if Jesus was sitting next to you. Have a conversation with Him. Secondly, are you growing in the fruit of the Spirit? Namely, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness and self-control. Interestingly, the psychologist Maslow cites that creative processes always involve a fallow period. When we name our moments of desolation to God, especially before we sleep, our brain continues to work on them unconsciously. I wonder how often you've woken up with a solution to something that was unfathomable the day before. Ideas open up, creativity blossoms when we're not trying. So it's not trying to solve something, it's just presenting it to God and noticing it. What were you least grateful for? What were you least able to give and receive love? What was said and done that made it so difficult? Don't ignore these moments in your day, but allow the negative feelings to be heard. It may reveal things that we need to work on. Recurring desolation may be putting us in touch with an underlying unresolved issue. And we might not understand it at first, but sometimes the answer is within our consolation. What we feel grateful for in a day is generally something that has an energy we need. What we feel frustrated for is generally an unmet need. So what has helped me most with my pessimism or negativity today? Allow God to fill you as you offer your desolation to him. So there's two questions for you to take away and have a chat with God about today. Firstly, what are you most grateful for? Give thanks. And secondly, what are you least grateful for? Recognise it before a loving God. Next week, we're going to be meeting in the chapel to delve deeper into prayer, and I look forward to joining you then. God bless.